I want to show you a small clip from a video that was done locally called Hard Days Are Gone about the Irish in the Capital District. There's a small segment that will show a broadside of a meeting for Irish relief here in Albany. The actual broadside is upstairs in the manuscript division here at the New York State Library.
In the midst of these troubles, the Irish in Albany held a rally in response to the crisis.
The response of Albany to the Irish famine was very significant. Albany was one of the most Irish cities at that time. There'd been a lot of emigration in the 1830s. Why do I say it was significant? Because the city of Albany raised twice as much money to send to Ireland as did the city of Brooklyn, which was a separate city at that time. The Catholic churches in New York City, which is Manhattan, raised $10,000 to send to Ireland, and the Catholic churches in Albany raised $5,000.
The aid to Ireland was welcome relief, but hardly enough to avert the disastrous effects of the Great Famine.
Beginning of that clip, the end of the clip was the broadside announcing the meeting that took place here in Albany. And actually, there are sort of three parts to contributions raised in Albany and in the Capital District as a whole. One was the efforts of a nonpartisan, non-denominational Irish Relief Committee, that is, the broadside indicates. The other was the raising of money in the Irish Catholic churches and in the Hibernian Providence Society here in Albany. And about actually, a little over $6,000 out of the approximately $10,500 that was raised here in Albany came from the Irish. The third part of it is what the state legislature did and did not do when it came to Irish relief, because there were a number of issues raised in the state legislature, as well as the fact that a number of state politicians came out publicly supporting a campaign for Irish relief. So it's a three-pronged kind of campaign. Let me start by quoting from a resident of Albany who moved to New York City, and he wanted to express pride in his hometown. "As Albany is my native place, I feel proud of the conduct of that ancient Dutch city," wrote Meinduk van Schaik, chairman of the New York City Irish Relief Committee, in April of 1847, in a letter that he wrote to the Central Relief Committee of the Society of Friends in Dublin. Van Schaik expressed his pride that his hometown had just filled an Albany ship for Ireland. Actually, Albany filled two ships for Ireland. One was called the Minerva, the second was called the Malabar. In addition to this, at least five other vessels carrying food from Albany went to Ireland in 1847. In reality, famine relief involved not only raising money for Ireland, but it also raised money for Scotland, because the famine that emerged in Ireland wasn't unique to Ireland. It was worst in Ireland, but the famine also hit the continent of Europe and hit Germany and hit parts of Scotland, particularly the Western Highlands and islands of Scotland. As a result of this, there was also an attempt to raise money for Scotland as well as Ireland, although because the famine in Scotland was not as bad, only about 10 or 15% of the funds raised here in Albany and elsewhere in the United States went for Scotland. 85 to 90% of the funds raised went for Ireland. Because this is the location of the state capital, the Albany Committee was also the state committee for Irish and Scottish relief, and channeled funds from the Capital District and from other parts of upstate New York to the New York City Committee, which physically forwarded the food to Ireland and Scotland. New Yorkers from Long Island to the North Country to the Niagara Frontier gave their pennies and their dollars to aid the starving as one of the greatest examples of voluntary philanthropy by the American people. Americans put aside their political, social, ethnic, and religious differences to unite in the common cause of aid to the starving Irish and Scots. For a brief moment in 1846-47, Americans forgot their differences and their mixed feelings about the arrival of the famine Irish in New York or Troy or Albany, and concentrated on viewing the Irish not as the other, but as fellow workers in a charitable campaign. For Americans, the Irish and Scots were fellow human beings who shared Christian values and needed and merited American assistance. Now, the potato blight that hit Ireland put about 150,000 people at risk per year in Scotland during this time period. The mortality rate in Scotland was extremely low. It was nowhere in comparison to what was happening in Ireland. And as a result of this, relatively few Scots emigrated. While literally hundreds of thousands of Irish were coming over, only a few thousand Scots per year emigrated during the Scottish famine. Part of the reason is the British government handled the situation in Scotland in much better manner than it did in Ireland. The second thing was there were other sources of food available to the Scots that were not available to the Irish. Third thing was that church groups and the British public were better organized in helping out the Scots, and also the magnitude of the crisis was far less in Scotland, and therefore more manageable. When news arrived of the potato blight here in the United States, that news from Ireland, first news arrived in 1845. Efforts were made in a few cities, Boston and New York City, to raise money for Ireland. But hope of a new harvest led to a quick decline in any fundraising in the United States. By the fall of 1846, the situation appeared worse than expected, and famine relief committees started soliciting funds in England, Scotland, and Ireland. The Society of Friends established a central relief committee in Dublin, and Americans sent most of their contributions through the Quakers for distribution. Committees in upstate New York, like Albany or Rochester, or the New York City Committee, utilized the Quakers. Dublin Quakers sent copies of their appeal to the United States. A New York City Quaker, who was a prominent merchant named Jacob Harvey, sent out news to other Quakers in Baltimore, Philadelphia, and elsewhere. He also aroused attention among the non-Quaker communities in the United States, particularly in the Northeast. In addition, his accounts got reprinted in the newspapers in New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore. So he began to raise public consciousness between November of 1846 and January of 1847 about the situation in Ireland. Whether in New York or Albany or in the village of Keysville in Essex County, the pattern remained consistent from Maine to Iowa. Citizens established voluntary citizens committee, organized on a temporary basis to solicit and forward contributions of money, food, and clothing. New York State emerged as the most important state for Irish relief because half of the relief supplies reaching Ireland went through the port of New York City, as New York City emerged as the major port in the United States. It didn't matter whether the relief came from Albany or Keysville or Canandaigua or Galena, Illinois. It went through the port of New York en route to Ireland or Scotland. Throughout the crisis, Irish immigrants sent remittances to friends and family in Ireland, separate from the general campaign to raise money. In Albany, the Irish members of the local Catholic churches had anticipated this call upon them by early remittances, wrote one of the newspapers. Catholic priests in Albany encouraged the Irish to send remittances to kin and friends in their hometowns, and the Irish responded enthusiastically. The members of St. John's Church alone raised $2,800 that they sent in remittances in early 1847 to relatives in Ireland. In fact, between January and March of 1847, $10,000 was sent in remittances from Irish immigrants and Irish Americans here in Albany to family and friends in Ireland, separate from what was raised in Catholic churches or by the Albany Relief Committee to be sent to Ireland. An Albany newspaper noted the extent of such remittances is little known to the general public. Jacob Harvey published accounts of remittances from Irish immigrants in New York City, Philadelphia, and Baltimore to encourage the non-Irish to donate. Essentially, he was using the Irish as a model of how they, with very little income, very little prosperity, were giving all they could. Therefore, he was encouraging other Americans to also contribute. Upstate New York editors reprinted accounts of remittances being sent by the Irish. Funds not directly sent to kith and kin via Catholic priests in Albany and other communities. There was also an effort to encourage money to be sent through Bishop John Hughes in New York City. Hughes volunteered to forward remittances from upstate communities and from Irish scattered around the United States through Catholic parishes in Ireland to family and friends. What made these remittances remarkable was they came not from middle-class Irish Americans, instead from working-class laborers and domestics, whether in New York City, Albany, or Troy. For example, in Troy, individuals of the working class sent over $2,000 in February 1847 alone. This was representative of the behavior of the poor and struggling Irish immigrants. As the Albany Irish Relief Committee concluded, Irish immigrants and donations privately transmitted regarding their limited pecuniary resources from which it is given, we believe to be unequal in the charities of the world. Again, this is coming from the overwhelming Protestant Relief Committee in their understanding of what is happening. Now, by the time of the famine, the Irish in Albany had already established a clear identification with Ireland, especially with Ireland's struggle for self-determination from British rule. In 1828, 1829, the Irish in the Capital District organized chapters of the Friends of Ireland, which supported Daniel O'Connell's campaign for Catholic emancipation in Ireland. Prominent members of the Irish community here in Albany, like John Cassidy or Michael Kager, organized a chapter in Albany that encouraged the people of Albany to support this cause in the name of religious equality. Besides Irish Americans organizing chapters in Albany, New York City, and Brooklyn, because of the increase in the number of Irish in the Capital District, chapters were organized in Troy and Lansingburg. This campaign for Catholic emancipation paralleled a famine relief campaign of 1847 by fostering cooperation among Irish Americans and identification with the Emerald Isle, engaging the support of the non-Irish. A Catholic emancipation campaign, like famine relief, created a positive public image of Irish Americans in the press and an unusual common bond between Protestant Catholics over shared values. They utilized the concepts of American republicanism to define their place in American society and show that they were not the other that nativists and Protestant religious leaders used to define the Catholic Irish. Just prior to the famine, Irish Americans in the Capital District and throughout New York State expressed their support for Ireland. Irish in Albany, Troy, and Schenectady endorsed Daniel O'Connell's campaign to repeal the Act of Union between England and Ireland and reestablish an Irish Parliament. Irish from Brooklyn to Buffalo held regular meetings, denounced the British, and raised small amounts to send to Ireland for O'Connell's movement. As in 1828, Irish New Yorkers reached out to the non-Irish, and many non-Irish political leaders voiced their support. Even before the campaign began in Albany, for example, the Irish were not shy about identifying with O'Connell and Irish causes. In the 1837 St. Patrick's Day dinner of the Albany's Hibernian Providence Society, there were at least five toasts to the Irish leader and countless toasts to Irish freedom. This is the identification with O'Connell and Ireland that the Irish from New York, Albany, Brooklyn expressed through the repeal movement. There were at least two chapters of the repealers here in Albany, as well as chapters in Troy, Schenectady, and Watervliet. Representatives of 20 of these chapters met in a national convention in September of 1843. As in 1828, in 1847, the Irish used the repeal movement to successfully reach out to fellow Americans. An Albany repealer boasted, "I'm glad to see so many genuine Americans of this good old Dutch city coming forward and aiding us with contributions to the cause." In addition, American political leaders came out publicly. For example, in Albany, 2,000 to 3,000 people marched on the Capitol in a repeal parade and participated in a demonstration outside the state capitol, chaired by former governor William Seward. Political leaders, including the lieutenant governor and Albany's mayor, expressed their support. Political leaders endorsed the repeal movement because of the growing numbers of Irish residents in New York and because the repeal movement appealed to Republican values of no established church, representative government, equal rights for all men, and freedom of conscience. Repeal and famine relief allowed Irish Americans and Irish immigrants to reach out to Protestant Americans and emphasize common ideals, goals, and bonds, and a way to define the Irish as part of America, as good citizens, and certainly not as the other. Summing up this bond of Irish and American values, Irish American editor William Cassidy wrote, "These sentiments are as dear to the American as to the Irish heart. For Irish Americans and for Irish immigrants, Catholic emancipation, repeal, and Irish relief allow them to identify as Irish and as Americans, and to create a positive public space for themselves in American society while reinforcing their identification with a separate Irish identity in America." News of the famine in Ireland appeared in the American press between mid-November 1846 and early January 1847. As an example, an Albany newspaper wrote that the famine and starvation in Ireland, across the Hudson in Lansingburg, a newspaper reminded its readers, the poor of Ireland are famishing with hunger. Initially, upstate communities between November of 1846 and January of 1847 did nothing to raise money for Ireland. Instead, it was in New York City, Brooklyn, Jersey City, Boston that began the campaign for raising funds for Ireland. Horace Greeley, editor of the New York Tribune, others began to raise money in the city of New York. Between November of 1846 and January 1847, most of the fundraising came from two groups of people, Irish and Quakers. And essentially, most other Americans ignored the issue, looking upon it as essentially an Irish issue or a Quaker issue. Some newspapers here in Albany attempted to use what was happening in New York to try to jumpstart a campaign for Irish relief here in Albany. Thurlow Weed, who was editor of the Albany Evening Journal and one of the leading Whig political figures in New York State, wrote, "The Friends of Humanity in the city of New York have set a ball rolling, which will not stop, we hope, until we send substantial relief to the starving people of Ireland." However, nothing happened. In the middle of January, grim reports of the famine began to arrive in the United States aboard two ships, the Hibernia and the Sarah Sands. These got reprinted in newspapers across the country. Citing the Sarah Sands, William Cassidy's Albany Evening Atlas reported, "The poor people are starving to death." An Albany paper tied to the anti-rent movement also sympathized with the plight of the Irish and warned that hundreds are dying daily of starvation. The Liberty Parties, that's an anti-slavery abolitionist newspaper here in Albany called The Patriot, informed its readers that the famine is spreading havoc among the Irish people. Regardless of political orientation, Whig, Hunker, or barn burner Democrat, anti-renter, Liberty Party, the press told their readers of the devastating news from Ireland. Across the state, New Yorkers could read of Ireland's fate. It didn't matter whether you lived in Albany or Kinderhook or Ovid in Seneca County. You could not escape learning about the famine in late January, early February of 1847. Shaker Daniel Sizer, living in Columbia County at the Mount Lebanon community, recorded, "The famine increases in Ireland, meetings held throughout the nation for their relief." In early February, citizens in various cities, including Albany, began to mobilize. However, the first meeting that got national attention took place in New Orleans during the first week of February, in part because the speaker was Henry Clay, the former presidential candidate of the Whig Party. A week later, Democratic Vice President George Dallas chaired a meeting in Washington, attended by members of the Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, and the Senate, and they called for a national campaign of famine relief. A Democratic senator from New York served as one of the vice presidents. A Whig Congressman, Washington Hunt, from Lockport in western New York, served on the Committee of Resolutions, and a New York City congressman gave a speech in favor of famine relief. Never let it be said by the historian that America was indifferent to the present sufferings of Ireland. The meeting asked that New York, Baltimore, Charleston, New Orleans, Boston, and Philadelphia assume responsibility for sending ships with contributions to Ireland as the major ports. And they called on Americans throughout the United States to establish voluntary committees. Efforts to involve the federal government in famine relief failed. A proposal from Washington Hunt for an appropriation of $500,000 out of public funds to provide money for famine relief went absolutely nowhere. It died in committee. A similar proposal in the Senate from a Kentucky senator also died in committee. Part of the reason was the opposition of the president, James K. Polk, a Democrat who argued that federal aid for the Irish was unconstitutional. And as a result, despite the fact that relief meetings in New York State and editorials in New York newspapers endorsed federal assistance to the Irish, it had no impact on Polk's constitutional scruples or on the votes of Democrats who supported the president. Instead, in response to a suggestion from George Dekay of New Jersey and from petitions from New York and Boston, Congress authorized finally in March the loaning of two warships, the Macedonian and the Jamestown, to transport one load of relief supplies each from New York City and Boston, respectively, to Ireland and Scotland. Simultaneously with the national meeting in Washington, Thurlow Weed announced in his newspaper on the 9th of February that a movement had begun in Albany for an effort to be made to immediately purchase a cargo of corn for shipment to Ireland. William Cassidy noted the famine relief movement had begun in other cities like New York, and he asked his readers, "Are not we here to have a share in this movement?" A similar call came from the Liberty Party's newspaper. It used the relief meetings and the money donated by Irish immigrants to goad anti-slavery advocates to perform their duty. There was a loud call upon the people here to open their hearts in pity. What was happening in Albany was repeated throughout New York State as editors campaigned for Irish relief. State and local political leaders joined in encouraging the citizens of New York to organize famine relief committees. Albany Mayor William Parmelee, a Whig, led a group of citizens who called for a public meeting on famine relief at the state capitol on Friday, the 12th of February, and that's what the broadside is announcing. Among those who joined the call were John Van Buren, the son of former President Martin Van Buren, and who also emerged as a Democratic leader. William Cassidy, who belonged to the Barnburner faction of the Democratic Party. Amasa Parker, who was a former Democratic Assemblyman and Congressman. Azariah Cutting Flagg, former state controller and a Democrat. Ira Harris, who was a Whig lawyer, politician, and a state senator. Edward C. Delavan, who was one of the leaders of the state's temperance movement. And Thomas W. Alcott, president of the Mechanics and Farmers Bank here in Albany. These were just some of the people involved in the call for Irish relief. Mayor Parmelee presided over the meeting before he turned it over to the governor of the state of New York, John Young, a Whig. The governor's presence gave the meeting the official blessing of the state political leadership, much as the Washington meeting provided the blessing of the national political leadership. Governor Young recommended the organization of relief committees in each town, ward in the state to collect money, food, and clothing to transmit to the Central Executive Committee here in Albany, which emerged as the state committee, for shipment via New York City to Ireland. Governor Young stressed some of the major themes repeated at other relief meetings: the magnitude of the crisis, common humanity, the bond of common origin with the Irish. And this is a repeated theme. In 1847, Americans, in justifying famine relief, view the Irish as part of their common origin, not as a separate race, at least not for a while. And the Americans as a people of plenty, living in the granary of the world. Americans had an obligation as the people of plenty to contribute to the famine Irish and the Scots. John Van Buren, the other major speaker, stressed similar themes, but once again acknowledge the individual charity of the Irish working class and use their remittances as a model of generosity that all Americans should emulate, emphasizing America's role as a beacon of liberty to the oppressed of the world. Van Buren took the theme that liberty also required American benevolence, that a free people should share their abundance with the Irish. American liberty had responsibility. Free men could show their acceptance of this burden through philanthropy. Whig political leaders like Governor Young and Democrats like John Van Buren redefined American republicanism to include an obligation for voluntary national philanthropy. Of course, this became a people-to-people, not a government-to-government mission in voluntary assistance, which in the antebellum period reinforced American perceptions of republicanism and America's role in the world as enlightened and humanitarian. 3 days after the state capitol meeting, members of the Assembly and the state Senate held a legislative meeting for Irish relief in the Assembly's chamber to raise funds and draft an address to the people of New York. Once again, this was a nonpartisan meeting. It included Whig Senator Ira Harris and a freshman assemblyman named Daniel Sickles, who was a Democrat from New York City. Daniel Sickles is better known for his service during the Civil War, for losing a leg, and for giving his leg to the Smithsonian. So his leg got pickled. The legislatures repeated the call of the state committee to the people of New York to organize committees and forward contributions. They stressed the magnitude of the crisis, common humanity, Americans as a people of plenty, and the moral obligation to help. The state legislatures dug into their own pockets and came up with $380. While the governor, state officials, and state legislatures actively endorsed the campaign for famine relief, the state took little official action. A proposal from Daniel Sickles for a contribution of $50,000 out of public funds went as far as Washington's Hunt's proposal in Congress. Support existed in the state legislature to waive tolls on contributions shipped for famine relief. Proposal passed the Assembly, but ran into unexpected opposition from 5 senators in the state Senate who blocked action on constitutional grounds. At the local level, there were proposals in several cities to give money out of public funds, but they were died in Buffalo and Rochester. There wasn't one here in Albany, by the way. The only city in New York State to give money out of public funds, in fact, the only place in New York that gave public funds was New York City. The New York City Common Council voted $5,000 to purchase 1,000 barrels of cornmeal that was sent aboard the Macedonian to Ireland. Elsewhere in New York State, proposals died. Meanwhile, the Albany Irish Relief Committee, serving simultaneously as the state committee, raised donations in Albany and solicited donations from upstate New York before it forwarded to the General Irish Relief Committee in New York. Charles Jenkins, who was a Whig alderman from the 6th Ward, chaired the Albany group, while, of course, a transplanted Albanian, Mindert van Schaik, headed the New York City Committee. The Albany Committee adopted most of Governor Young's address as part of their appeal to each town, city, and ward to create relief associations and forward money to the state committee. Newspapers around the state aided the relief effort by publishing copies of the appeal or the relief instructions from the committee, once again suggesting the public service role of journalists in this campaign. Let me just give you an example of how people contributed. Let me just quickly use an example from outside of Albany, St. Lawrence County. Anyone who contributed did. For example, Isabella McGuire gave one ham. Ransom Lovejoy donated one bushel of wheat in Potsdam. Widow Vollins contributed one bushel of corn, and Arthur Gilmore sent one pork shoulder to Messina. Again, this was the level of famine relief that involved people throughout the state. Now, let me go specifically into what was happening here in Albany. Again, communities around Albany sent food in. For example, the Shakers in New Lebanon sent food and clothing to Albany. As Anne Buckingham, a Shaker in the New Lebanon community, recorded, CC took a load of grain to Albany to be sent to Ireland. From all over New York State, people sent in food and sent in money. And again, it was non-denominational. Examples being the Lutherans in Valencia, the Dutch Reformed in Kinderhook. In Washington County, Dutch Reformed Congregationals, Baptist, Methodist churches raised money or sent in food to Ireland through the Albany Committee. Here in Albany, a bit of a conflict developed over how to send food to Ireland. The conflict developed about whether or not to use the warship Macedonian. Essentially, Captain Decay tried to persuade the Albany Committee, "I should be most happy to have the honor of carrying across the Atlantic the contributions of the great city of Albany." However, the Albany Committee refused. And although Decay sent an emissary to speak with Mayor Parmalee and with other members of the committee, they refused to do so. They followed the advice of the New York City Committee, which argued essentially that it was a misuse of public funds to use the warships, that it was cheaper and quicker to send it through merchant vessels. There was another factor, a psychological factor here in Albany, that rather than have the contributions lumped together aboard the Macedonian, what they wanted to do is send an Albany ship to Ireland. The same thing happened in New Jersey. There was a Jersey ship for Ireland. There was a Brooklyn ship for Ireland. That essentially people wanted the pride, the local pride, state pride, played a role in persuading people to contribute, and for the State Committee in Albany, as for the New Jersey Committee in Newark, using local pride helped motivate people to engage in civic virtue. Citizens of Albany contributed $10,500 for Ireland, while money and shipments of provisions from other parts of upstate New York amounted to about $13,500. Most of the donations came in small amounts. The largest contribution for the general fund in Albany came from Reuben H. Walworth, who ran unsuccessfully for governor as a Democrat in 1848. 1848 was not a good year for the Democrats. Martin Van Buren, the former president, gave $50. His son, John Van Buren, gave $25. Erastus Corning, one of the richest men in Albany, gave $50. But to give you an idea of other people, common people, the people who worked for one of the largest stove manufacturers pooled their wages. These were iron molders. They put together $150. Women who were domestics, employed at Delavan House Hotel, dug into their pockets, came up with $42 for Irish relief. Even children contributed. For example, four unknown small children pooled their entire resources for $2.50. And a little boy gave all he had, scraped together 37 cents for Irish relief. Most residents of Albany gave between 50 cents and $5 for Irish relief. To further the cause of famine relief, the city's political and business leaders joined together to sponsor a benefit at the Odeon Theater for Irish and Scottish relief. Sponsors included Erastus Corning, Mayor William Parmalee, stove merchant Joel Rathbone, John Van Buren. The sponsors sold tickets for 50 cents or $1. You could see a play and a dance on the 18th of March for famine relief. The press promoted the benefit as a community event to aid the Irish and Scots. Similar benefits in Troy and Brooklyn and elsewhere formed a pattern of common attempts by Irish relief committees to engage the public and use entertainment as a vehicle to enlarge the pool of donors for famine relief. The Protestant establishment in Albany endorsed famine relief. Reverend William Buell Sprague, pastor of the Second Presbyterian Church, a leader of the Albany Bible Society and the City Tract Society, supported famine relief by encouraging citizens to attend a benefit temperance lecture for Irish relief. Members of other families that were pillars of the Albany's Protestant establishment all served on the Odeon Benefit Committee and contributed to the cause. Reflecting the contributions of Protestant residents, in this non-denominational relief effort, Charles Jenkins informed the Dublin Quakers that these 2,000 barrels of food are equally mingled contributions of the Roman Catholic and Protestant citizens of Albany. Now, half of the Albany's contributions came from the city's Irish Catholics, who gave more proportionally than larger Catholic communities in Brooklyn and New York City. Brooklyn came out with about $2,500 from the churches in Brooklyn. New York City, much larger again, $10,000, $6,000 is coming from Albany Irish. Members of the Hibernian Providence Society donated $400 from their general funds and another $200 in individual contribution. It included not only the prominent members of the Hibernian Providence Society, middle class people and elite, but also from individuals like David Mahoney, a laborer in Albany's waterworks. The Hibernian Society in Famine Relief permitted prominent Irish Americans to connect with both the city's Protestant establishment and the predominantly working class Irish community on an issue that crossed ethnic, religious, and class lines. Even political opponents could work together. Peter Kager, who was a member of one of Albany's prominent Catholic families, became an influential member of the radical Barnburner faction. And he challenged Erastus Corning, who was a member of the more conservative Hunker faction in New York. But he worked with Corning, and he worked with Mayor William Parmalee, who was a Whig. Famine relief crossed party lines. It allowed, whether they were self-made Yankees like Corning, members of the Protestant establishment, or Irish-American leaders, to work together in a cause that, again, united all Americans. But the reality was that most Irish residents of Albany were recent immigrants of modest means. St. Mary's Church, the oldest congregation, raised over $2,300. Setting an example for the congregation, Father Schneller purchased 50 barrels of flour from Rochester. It was worth $350. Members of the congregation who belonged to the Laborers Mutual Benefit Society pooled $100. Contributions came from members who were part of the Catholic elite, like editor William Cassidy of the Atlas, and John Tracy, a spirits distiller and the sixth richest man in Albany. Less prestigious members who donated $1 apiece included Michael Masterson, a street paver and secretary of the Labor Mutual Benefit Society, and his brothers Philip, who was also a paver, and Patrick, a machine trader. This congregation, while small in numbers, raised the largest amount of any Catholic church in the state of New York, despite the fact having poor members. Poor Irish immigrants, domestics, laborers, cartmen, and factory workers gave what they could afford, and their generosity won favorable notice in the Albany press. The same happened at the other Catholic churches here in Albany. Even Catholic churches that were strained having to open up their purses to build a church and an orphan asylum. In the end, Irish Catholics could be proud of what they contributed. No wonder that one local Irish Catholic boasted that Albany's Irish had been among the foremost in this glorious work of charity, because they were.